Good afternoon and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture through the lens of USC and Southern California. I'm Jordan Sheldon, coming to you live from Studio B in USC's Annenberg Media Center.
And I'm Tammy Laura Odunsi. It is March 29th, aka my 20th birthday.
Happy birthday, Tammy Laura.
Thank you. On today's show, Governor Newsom proposes a new bill to combat high gas prices, a deeper look into Trojan Check, and is COVID-19 the reason people are getting tipsy?
All that and more from Where We Are. But first, let's take a look at today's news headlines from Evan Wino.
Russian delegates claimed the country would ease their attacks in Ukraine's capital city of Kyiv and the city of Chernihiv during peace talks in Istanbul today. Today's conversation marks the first time in weeks that Russian and Ukrainian representatives met face-to-face. Despite talks of peace agreements, the Pentagon noted in a press conference this morning that few Russian forces have pulled out of Kyiv. President Joe Biden signed a law today that makes lynching a hate crime. The law commemorates and is named after Emmett Till, who was murdered in 1955 at just 14 years old. The bill passed unanimously through the Senate on March 7th. There have been over 200 attempts since 1900 to get similar bills signed into law. In local news, yesterday's rain showers created quite a blunder for two people and a dog who were rescued from an overflowing LA river. The dog's owner was rescued in the San Fernando Valley, but her dog continued along the river path for hours. A man jumped in to save the dog, and he had to be rescued after the dog bit him and broke free from his arms. The dog was finally saved by the LA Fire Department crew and is now reunited with its owner.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Evan Wayno.
Gas prices in LA are averaging $6 a gallon. In order to combat this, Governor Newsom proposed a bill that offers Californians $400 each for each registered vehicle in their name, capping at $800 per person. Vehicles include motorcycle and electric cars. Joanna Bauerdorf has the story.
The bill has not been approved yet, but if it is approved, the first payments would go out in July. We spoke to Asha Weinstein Agrawa about her ideas on the bill. Agrawa, who works as the director of the Mineta Transportation Institute National Transportation Finance Center, said,
I would say that long term, it's not particularly going to help people. I don't think it's enough money to have a long term impact in terms of vehicle choices.
Agrawa also explained the environmental consequences of the bill.
We in California have made a number of years now a pretty clear policy choice to try and encourage people to either drive more fuel-efficient vehicles or take transit or walk or bike. And so tying sort of these payments to vehicle ownership, to me, feels like it is sending exactly the wrong signal. And if we want to help people who are low income, I think we should simply find a way to give money to people who are low income, regardless of whether or not they own vehicles.
Agrawa additionally discusses the potential latent consequences of the bill and how it may not truly benefit those who need it most.
If your goal is to help families who are struggling right now, this is an incredibly wasteful way to reach them, because in addition to the payments to the families that really need it, you're going to be giving similar payments to families who don't need it. I mean, we're all happy to get a check from the government and nobody's going to complain, but you know, much of California does not need that help right now.
Rather than give a rebate to all California drivers, Agrawa proposed an alternate, more practical solution that focuses on alleviating public transportation costs.
You would perhaps make the fares free for people who meet some minimum income, up to some maximum income. But that's a lot more difficult to implement.
According to Agrawa, while the bill may lessen the financial burden of gas prices for some, it is not helpful enough to outweigh the potential effects that incentivizing driving could have on the environment. The Senate and Assembly released their own proposal in response to surging prices. They plan to offer $200 rebates to help each California taxpayer and dependent, excluding the top 10% of earners. Rebates are offered regardless of owning a vehicle. For Annenberg Media, I'm Joanna Bauerdorf.
Before anyone can walk on USC campus, they have to use Trojan Check, the COVID tracking system used by students, faculty, and anyone that wants to visit our college campus. Charlotte Phillip takes an inside look at how the system functions to get almost 20,000 undergraduates tested for COVID-19 and onto campus so that they can get to class on time.
Every single student, staff member, and visitor to USC uses Trojan Check to get on campus every day. You fill out the symptoms questionnaire. Do you have a fever? Do you have a headache? Do you have shortness of breath? You know the rest. You make sure your COVID tests and vaccines are updated in the MySHR system. Then you present your handy QR code to an attendant at any of the campus entrances. This morning, the line to scan your QR code is particularly long. But finally, you're off to class. It's complicated to build a system that can track test results, personal vaccine information, and questionnaires all in one place. USC IT employee Veronica Garcia says a system of this scale doesn't get made overnight. She was on the team who spearheaded the Trojan Check app project.
There was a task force from across campus that came together to just really throw the question of how do we do this? How do we do this? How do we build a technology? Do we buy something? There really wasn't a lot out there at the time.
Every campus department you could imagine got involved.
From across campus, we were talking to researchers, epidemiologists, obviously are part of that committee, but also our chief health officer, Dr. Van Orman, student health, even campus operations.
A lot of moving parts all had to come together for this app to work. Garcia explains that the system actually consists of a few technologies all put together.
First and foremost, the hardest part is bringing the data together. We work with, maybe a half a dozen different data sources that we bring together. And then there has to be a real-time layer that pulls things back and forth. You make an appointment, that appointment has to be reflected in Trojan Check so that you can get a badge. So we get that information real-time, whether you've taken your training in Trojan Learn, all of those things are different systems. So we're bringing those together through real-time layers that talk to each other.
Garcia also says that issues like accessibility and comfort of use are essential for the system.
We have engineers who and designers who are focused on how easy something is to use, the ordering that buttons are in. There's a whole methodology behind whether something's easy to use, whether it's accessible and will work with assistive technologies.
Dr. Jeffrey Klossner is a Keck professor of infectious diseases and an expert on COVID. He says systems like Trojan Check may not even be necessary at this point in the pandemic.
I mean, Trojan Check is just an example of one, but they're used all over the country, all over the world in terms of symptom checks and, you know, reporting on exposures and reporting on, you know, recent test status. I'm not aware of any evidence that any of those in 2 years have had any benefit. And in fact, the CDC in its own offices does not employ it. Anything like that.
Klossner says underreporting systems is also a concern for apps like Trojan Check.
I would be highly suspicious if, you know, the frequency of fever was less than 5%. They're not objective, right? They're not, you know, measuring something irrefutable. They're based on someone's self-report. So they give a false sense of security.
The rules are changing now for COVID-19 on campus. A new announcement from USC put an end to weekly testing for all students and staff beginning on March 1st. But for now, it seems like Trojan Check will remain in place for as long as the pandemic stretches on. For Annenberg Media, I'm Charlotte Phillip.
And I can definitely attest to that pointlessness of Trojan Check.
Yes.
I mean,
oh my God, the website is always.
If I have a cough, if I even have the slightest cough and I answer the Trojan Check truthfully, then I can no longer leave my building for the entire day, despite, you know, having COVID less than a month ago.
It's just so generalized that it doesn't really
really articulate like actual symptoms. You know what I
exactly.
mean?
Exactly.
And then the website's always crashing because so many people are trying to join it at once. It's pretty...
Right. And once again, I'm Jordan Sheldon.
And I'm Tammy Laura Odunsi.
And it is 10 minutes past the hour. Coming up, how the pandemic has influenced drinking habits. And we talk with USC student Taylor...
Ontario.
...about her newest song release.
Driving is up in the United States.
Drinking is up in the United States.
So sorry, guys. Drinking is up in the United States as a result of the pandemic. For one, alcoholic beverage, conversations and overconsumption and healthy drinking habits seem to fly under the radar. With more is Peter Jordolgay.
Is there a more casual or elegant way to wind down a long day or enhance a meal with friends than with a glass or two of wine? A lot of Americans agree.
I like to drink wine because it's the sign my day's come to an end. It's my decompression, relaxation.
Sometimes I just want to hold a glass with my pinky out, you know, just chill out, just change the vibe a little bit.
I like drinking wine because I never drink wine alone, and so I'm always with someone drinking wine.
During the pandemic, people spent more money on drinking and more time drinking inside their homes. According to Forbes magazine, online wine sales increased 234% in 2020, the first year of the pandemic. And Americans hit a billion, that's right, 1 billion gallons of wine consumed. Even still, conversations surrounding wine and health seem faint. I spoke with Rebecca Oh, a registered dietitian at USC, to dive into the conversation.
Our body metabolizes the alcohol in all types of alcoholic beverages the same way. One drink, defined as maybe 1 ounce of spirits, 4 to 6 ounces of wine, or a 12-ounce beer, our body is going to metabolize that alcohol the same way.
But O says wine does come along with some added benefits.
Wine, both red and white wine, has antioxidants that can help to promote our heart health. Those are not present in beer or spirits, though.
She also speaks to the unique context that wine drinking often occurs in.
It's typically consumed with a meal, maybe at a more casual pace, or even if you think about going wine tasting, you know, it's really different than a mixed drink or certainly like shots, right?
O makes one thing clear.
We do find, you know, that the type of alcohol you consume is less important than the amount of alcohol you consume and your pattern of consumption.
O defines binging as the consumption of more than 4 to 5 drinks in a 2-hour window. She says the consequences can be dire.
Just one incidence of binge drinking has been shown to raise your risks of pancreatitis, which often can land folks in the hospital with severe pain. And in the long term, you know, of course, liver disease, increased risk of several different types of cancers, the financial impact, potential job loss, so lots.
I'm sitting in a pastoral backyard in South LA chatting with Cameron Malstead. He's a certified sommelier who knows a thing or two about knocking back a glass.
Really was when I started working in fine dining restaurants, I realized like, oh wow, wine can be like your job. It's the coolest guy in the restaurant is the dude with the nicest suit and the best haircut.
Malstead said he similarly experienced the urge to raise a glass at the end of the night during the pandemic.
At the beginning of the pandemic, it was like, oh man, just need to cut this tension a little bit. And like nothing does that better than a glass of wine.
But Malstead thinks about his alcohol intake quite a bit.
Yeah, after about that first month, I became hyper aware of it. Started taking more days, weeks, months off of alcohol just to give myself some boundary.
He says wine professionals have to walk a thin line to stay on top of consumption.
It's real easy to get swept away. It's something that me personally, and I know other wine professionals as well, are just kind of have to constantly think about and be aware of and talk to themselves about.
Are there any specific ways that you kind of regulate your drinking habits as a professional in the industry?
I like a lot the like every other day program. Like it's something I just kind of do like, I had some wine last night with my wife. Probably not going to have something tonight.
Research published by Massachusetts General Hospital says excessive drinking habits are up 21% since the start of the pandemic. A reminder to pay attention to all alcohol consumption, even that glass or two of wine. For Annenberg Media, I'm Peter Jorogay.
Once again, you're listening to From Where We Are. Coming up is an interview with USC student and singer Taylor Contarino. You can listen and you can continue listening on our YouTube live stream.
That's Annenberg Radio News on YouTube. The full version will also be available on uscannenbergmedia.com.
All right, and thank you to our YouTube listeners for continuing to watch the live stream. We sat down and we spoke to Taylor Contarino about her new single that came out. Very excited to share this interview.
Woohoo! And her work with Universal Music Group.
My name is Taylor Marie Contarino.
Yes, guys, I am super happy that she's here today. Taylor is a Annenberg journalism student, a sophomore at USC, and a spectacular musician. And share your big news with the audience.
Yeah, so I just released my first ever song onto all streaming platforms this past Friday, and it's called Tough Love.
Yes! And where can they find the song?
Yes, you can find it on Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, even like SoundCloud, and it's called Tough Love, and it just says Taylor Marie. That's the artist name I go by.
What inspired you to write Tough Love? Is there a story behind it?
Ooh,
let's get into the nitty gritty.
I know the vibes, but
yeah, you know, I'll be completely honest. You know, I was kind of talking to this guy. Mm-hmm. You know, Tough Love is my first song ever, so a lot of the lyrics that went into it are a culmination of all the feelings that I felt in past relationships.
Wow.
So it's not even necessarily back to one guy, but you know, since it is my first song ever, all of the feelings that I've just felt in the past, I just wanted to put into this song.
Can you tell us about some of your influences?
Yeah, I would absolutely love to. So, you know, growing up, I was really into R&B music, like Summer Walker, Jhené Aiko, Sydney Rene, Tink, like Treat Me Like Somebody. I remember I would always put on their music in the car. My friends would be like, Taylor, where do you find this? Like, this is great, but like, where do you find this? And where I found it was like, I would spend so much time on YouTube just typing in like, oh, like R&B love songs, emotional like music about love and relationships. I've always been a really deep person, and it's always just been a dream of mine to actually take like what's inside my mind and actually put it onto like distributing platforms. And I'm so thankful that I finally just got the courage to do it.
That's honestly incredible, and I love the fact that you have this passion, you're going for it, because it's not easy, especially being vulnerable with work and your art. And I just love that you know how to tap into that vulnerability and appreciate artists that do that. So that is spectacular. And let's talk about some of your work with Universal, girl. Like,
yeah. Oh my gosh, I love my job. So I work at Universal Music Group. I work at the sector of Universal Music Group called 1824. And we're essentially the Youth Creative Solutions Group of Universal Music. So if an artist is trying to tap in with like a younger audience, so like the 18 to 24 demographic, that's where we got our name from. They come to us because they know that we work at UMG and we're also part of that audience that they're trying to appeal to. I've had such incredible experiences, honestly. We're all about connecting the artists to the fans. We're all about creating like unique experiences. It's something that's like super unique about us, is like we want to create fan experiences that appeal to both the fan and the artist. And just when music comes out, we want it to be special, we want it to be unforgettable, and we want to create memorable experiences for the artists that we love and the fans that we love. So I hope that kind of gives you a basic rundown.
Yes.
So like, we're super honest, like if we think something's cool, like we're gonna tell the artist like, yeah, we think this is awesome and this is what you should do. And then when it actually happens, you know, we have great turnouts because it's kind of like we are the audience that they are kind of aiming to please. Mm-hmm. And we're also the ones helping with that creative ideation. So it's an amazing system, and I love the work I do at UMG and at 1824. And
congratulations on that. Amazing for you. Thank you for coming on. It's been great getting to meet you, and go listen to her new single, Tough Love.
Yes. Thank you so much. My gosh, Taylor.
Thank Woo! You.
Thanks for staying for that interview. That is all we have time for on today's From Where We Are. Spencer Klein, Jeffrey Lee, and Polina Sharazova produced today's show. We also got help from Shirley Jihad.
Fernando Cienfuegos is our technical operator, and Derek Ronfro composed our theme music.
We are also streaming live on KXSC. Remember to follow KXSC at kxsc.org/listen and on YouTube at Annenberg Radio News. And you can subscribe to From Where We Are in Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you're looking for more news, be sure to download Annie, Annenberg Media's news app. And to look for us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, you can find our at Annenberg Media. Once again, I'm Jordan Sheldon.
And I'm Tammy Laura Odunsi.
From all of us at Annenberg Radio, whoever you are, wherever you are, we hope you'll join us again for
From Where We Are.